This is Fresh Air. My guest Chrissy Hind grew up in Akron, Ohio, but she found her place as a musician in England during the punk rock scene of the 70s. In the late 70s, she formed her band The Pretenders. Their first album came out in 1980. Rock critic Kurt Loder wrote that Hind has proved herself one of the most completely convincing female rock and rollers in recent memory, a stingingly effective rhythm guitarist whose voice combines the fluidity of jazz singing with the rawness of rock. The band has been reformed over the years due to the drug-related deaths of two of the group's original members. The Pretenders have a new album called Pact. Hind wrote 10 of the 11 songs, sings lead, and plays guitar. Here's How Do I Miss You.
How do I miss you? A slave changing hands from master to master. Your knees will turn brown and fall to the ground, and another summer is gone. Gone is the summer with you.
How do I miss you?
There's a couple of songs on the new record about being lonely and missing someone far away. What does that relate to?
Oh, a lot of things. You know, I've left Akron. I've had a lot of, I've had friends come and go. I've left my country, my lovers, my band's gone.
When did rock and roll first make an impression on you?
Probably just pre the Beatles. I think the first record I had was South Street by the Orlons.
Mm-hmm.
I also had Palisades Park by Freddie Cannon. So
right.
Those are some of the early records I had. But the first album I had was Meet the Beatles, I believe.
Did you have any older brothers or sisters or older friends who helped introduce you to new records when you were young?
I had an older brother. He's 4 years older than me, but he was a jazz buff. And he was, the kids in the neighborhood called him Benny when he was eight because he played the clarinet. And he used to say to me, you know, Christy, that no one will even have ever heard of rock and roll in 10 years. Because, he really thought the future was jazz. And I throw that back at him, whenever I get a chance.
There were girl groups when you were coming of age, where women sang rock and roll. But there were so few women who played and sang. And most of the girl groups were more pop or soul than rock and roll. Was it hard when you were coming of age to get in a band with the guys? Because I'm assuming most of the musicians in the bands were guys.
Well, I didn't do it when I was coming of age. I didn't really start till I was about 24, and by then the climate had changed. You know, this whole thing of where were the chicks all these years? You know, this, if you're talking pre-birth control, they really were raising the kids. But in my case, I didn't. I could see that there wasn't really much of a scene I could latch onto, where I wouldn't be seen as being a gimmick. Probably, there wasn't really a scene that I was interested in, and I'm very much part of. I like feeling part of a scene. That's what excites me. So, around the time I was about 24, and it was kind of pre-punk days in London, that's when I got excited, and I could see my way in because really no one cared who you were, what you were, where you came from in that punk thing.
Mm-hmm. I think for a lot of girls growing up who loved rock and roll, that their fantasies were more about having a romance with one of their rock and roll heroes rather than playing in a band themselves, because it was just so unheard of in a way for women.
Well, and also they were chicks
bands.
And these were like the cutest guys. You know,
well,
that's
yeah.
Understandable, certainly.
Right.
And,
But I think that the fantasy for a lot of women was to make love to one of these guys as opposed to be a rock and roller yourself. And I was wondering if you went through a stage like that of having that fantasy instead of the playing rock and roll fantasy, thinking that that might have been out of reach?
making love to a rock star is never very far out of reach.
Playing in a rock band would have been far out of reach.
In fact, this is where, the possibilities become, plentiful for all of us. But as far as playing, I was such a late starter. I didn't really get in. I didn't have a boyfriend till I was about 16, and even that was a very. He dumped me because he got frustrated. Let me put it that way. And I didn't really start getting it on till I was really almost an adult. I was more concerned with hanging out and music and you know, smoking pot. And I just wasn't into guys. I'm so glad now. I'm so glad that I was busy in my room learning how to play my guitar with my Mel Bay book of chords and working out which, you know, strings to put my fingers on. And I'm so glad I did that instead of getting hung up on some guy. I mean, what a waste of time. You got 40 years, you know, and there's like 10,000 guys out there. You just take your pick. You can have them all if you want. But why waste your youth with some guy going steady, you know? I mean, it never appealed to me. But and I'm just so lucky. I feel I'm so lucky now because I meet friends of mine and they like had a boyfriend in high school and they went steady and then they went to the prom with the guy and then they dated him for another 5 years. And I'm like, God, you know, what did you do? You know, what kind of a teenagehood is that?
But tell me why it took you so many years before you actively tried to form a band or get in a band.
Well, I toyed with the idea when I was a teenager, but again, there wasn't really the scene and I didn't have anyone around me. I had kind of tried to travel around the world. I wanted to be a Dharma bum, you know, which mm-hmm. I read about reading Jack Kerouac, you know, at school when I was trying to read, when I was supposed to be reading whatever else. I wasn't cutting the mustard in school, and I just wanted to get out and be a vagabond. But then I could see this sort of pinhole of light, and I just went for it. It's timing in this business, you know, or in the whole music scene. So much of it is down to, you know, whatever you're doing is really reflecting the moment, the times. And so I just kind of waited till it seemed like there was a place for me, I guess.
The Pretenders have a new record called Pact. Let's listen to another selection from the album. This is Chrissy Hynde's song, Criminal. Chrissy Hynde is my guest. You got your start musically in England. What got you over to England?
It just seemed like a good idea. I was working as a Stouffer girl, and then I was drawing coats of arms for some sort of phony baloney mail order service. And I did. I worked these odd jobs for a couple of years, and then the clock on the wall said it's time to go, and I just went and got a plane ticket. I had about $500, so it seemed like I could go anywhere I wanted if I had a passport. I worked that out at an early age, and then I just decided to act upon it.
When did you start writing songs?
Oh, I suppose when I was a young teenager, 14 or something.
So when you were in England, you had a lot of songs you'd already written?
No, I wasn't thinking about music in England. I was just I was hanging out and just trying to work out what life was all about. I didn't come with my portfolio of songs or anything. I'd even forgotten all about that, to be honest. I forgot all about it. And then one day, I went over to this friend of mine's house. This woman, someone referred me to because she had some kittens she was giving away. So I went over there to get this cat, and I heard this noise. And I said, what is that? Is that a band or what? And someone said, oh, that's Trisha's son's band. So I went up, and there was these 14-year-old guys playing, and I thought it was, this is way pre-punk. And I said, hey, you guys are really good. And it got me really excited. And I said, but why don't you try some stuff like this? And I took one of the guy's guitars and I was showing him like how to play White Light, White Heat and some stuff. Because I thought it'd be real good stuff for them to start on. And they kind of looked at me like, in fact, everyone was surprised that all of a sudden I pulled out the guitar and started singing and playing the guitar. And then I remembered that I could do that. And then I decided, well, why don't I do that? You know, I don't want to just keep you know, living this hand-to-mouth existence. And that sort of gave me the idea again.
So how did you actually get the Pretenders together?
Well, this friend of mine, Lemmy from Motorhead, he knew I'd been trying to get a band together for a while now. And he said I should look out for this guy who was a drummer. I was in Ladbroke Grove, just dossing about on people's floors and stuff. And he said to look out for this guy. So one day I looked out the window and on a Saturday afternoon in Ladbroke Grove and all the markets are opening, and saw this guy walking down the street who looked like the guy I described. So I sort of threw open the window and said, "Are you Gas?" And he said, "Yeah." And I said, "Well, do you want to get in a band?" And he said, "I don't have any drums." And I said, "I'm sure I can arrange something." So he came up and I showed him some songs and he said, "Let's do it." So he was from Hereford. So this is the reason I'm telling you about this guy who doesn't really figure into the story after this is because he was my Hereford connection. In fact, the whole band turned out to be from Hereford. Now, in England, it'd be kind of like, let me say that Hereford's far away from London. It's right on the coast of Wales. And it had nothing to do with the sort of groovy punk scene. So, in fact, it was quite refreshing.
Mm-hmm. How did you choose the name The Pretenders?
Well, we'd gone through a series of names. Well, we didn't have any names. We did some gigs, and we still didn't have a name. But they printed the record, actually, Stop Your Sobbing, and they still didn't have a name. And I remembered he was a biker I knew. He would take me in his room, and he'd put this big bolt on the door, you know, so none of the brothers could hear. And he would put on this Sam Cooke record he'd had. And he'd say, "This is my favorite song, sweetheart." And he'd put this Sam Cooke singing The Great Pretender, you know, and, like, he'd just play it real quiet with this bolt on the door so no one else would hear. And I this always impressed me that this, like, big, really, you know, kind of hood, you know, had this soft spot. Anyway, I was telling this other chick I knew about this guy, and we were, like, having a real laugh about him. And I remembered that as the guy said, "Look, we're printing the record. We got to have a title." And I said, "Oh, well, just so call it The Pretenders."
Do you feel that as a woman you were up against any sexism when you were starting out, or now, for that matter?
No.
Not with musicians or audience or in the industry itself?
No. I have never felt any sexual, any discrimination, sex discrimination.
Well, great.
In music. And I don't think people care,
mm-hmm.
you know? If you try to make anything about what you're doing a gimmick, or if you try to, I have never had to work harder because I'm a chick or anything. I think the guys could see my limitations, but they could see my vision.
I want to play one of your early hits, Back on the Chain Gang. Is there a story behind the song?
Kind of, you know, it's just kind of a personal thing. And then Jimmy died, so maybe there was a little bit of a reference to some of, to us.
I found a picture of you. Oh, what hijacked my world at night? To a place in the past we've been cast out of.
You were involved with Ray Davies for a while, and I assume that when you were coming of age, like during the British invasion, that the Kinks were probably musically really important to you, and the first record that you recorded was one of the Kinks' songs. And I think it must be really hard in a relationship with someone if you had put them up on a pedestal beforehand and really knew their work well to then be in a relationship and be, you know, be on an equal footing with them. Do you know what I mean? If it's someone that you had really looked up to before.
Mm-hmm. Well, he deserved to be on a pedestal because he was great. And I think the Kinks were, you know, one of the problems. They might have been the most influential band in the 60s, if you can say there was one. I think the Beatles and the Stones were looking at the Kinks the whole time. You can hear it if you, you know, in chronological order, if you just listen to Autumn Almanac or just the musical approach in a lot of the stuff. And he had such a great, and he's such a unique style, and he was such a unique songwriter. So naturally, he was on a pedestal for good reason. What's happened to me since I've been in this position, you know, being a success, being in a band, I've just had this chance to meet all these people that, you know, that I admired for a long time, tons of them. But I've always been able to keep a distinction between how I feel about them as an artist and then my personal relationship. Mm-hmm. For example, if I'm in a room with, Prince Charles told me not to name drop, but if I'm in a room with, like, let's say Iggy Pop, and I'm just talking to him on a real personal basis, I might call him Jim. But if I'm referring to him to anybody else, I'll always refer to him as Iggy Pop out of respect because I look up to him so much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so even if I was fighting like cats and dogs with Ray, which we did all the time, even if we both were walking out of the Peppermint Lounge with bloody noses, if a Kinks song came on the radio, I'd be like, oh, turn that up, Waterloo Sunset. It's always been a completely separate thing, and it's just lucky.
Uh-huh. Can I ask you what surprised you most about what the rock life has actually turned out to be like?
Nothing surprised me, It's kind of what I thought it was going to be like. It's all the stuff that you want. Hotel rooms, lots of guys around, late nights. That's enough for me, yeah. I take my simple pleasures.
Do you ever tour with your children?
Oh, always, yeah. Uh-huh. They've never seen one of the shows yet, though, because on the last tour it was still, like, past their bedtime. So I just put them in the bunks down in the parking lot, in the coach, do the show, and then come back and collect them, and I'd get, pack my bags and get in the coach.
I'm just thinking about what a different life you must have on the road than, say, the musicians who are in your band.
Well, yeah, come to think of it. Because, like on the last tour, they had their own coach, the musician's coach. And I couldn't go because I had my kids. I was on the nanny's coach. I don't know. I can't tell you how many times I saw. I mean, I missed it the first time around and I intended to. But I have now seen Mary Poppins probably about as many times as like anyone in this country. And that didn't actually make me feel too groovy when I was on the last. Not being able to sleep on the coach and, having this whole... I mean, not complaining, I don't want to kvetch about my kids, but I really was dying to, like, sneak onto the musician's coach for one night, and do things that you do on the musician's coach, which you can't do on the nanny's coach.
Chrissy Hynde, her group The Pretenders, has a new record called Pact.
Don't be sentimental. Move to the heart, baby, the heart of the city. This is where the future lies beneath the burning sulfur skies. Come on! Come on! Come on!
This is Fresh Air.